From the studios of AdviceRadio.com, bring you Healthy Trends, a conversation empowering the journey of health and wellness, mind, body, and spirit. Listen to Romel Oxibal and his guests create enriching dialogue on health and nutrition, consumer health activism, sustainability programs, environmental wellness. Hear the inspiring voices of masters from the New Age movement, spirituality, and holistic approaches to power, greatness, and freedom. Healthy Trends, uplifting, enlivening, transforming. Our dear friends, here's your host on Healthy Trends, Romel Oxibal.
Welcome back to Healthy Trends. This is your host, Romel Oxibal, on AdviceRadio.com and 1680 AM Radio, Los Angeles. I am very privileged and I am very honored to have a special guest with us today. His name is Swami Kriyananda. He is one of the foremost spiritual teachers of yoga principles in the world today. So if you've been listening into the show, I'm sure you're familiar with this name. Just a brief history: in 1948, at the age of 22, he became a disciple of the Indian yoga master Paramahansa Yogananda. He's one of the few remaining direct disciples of Yogananda teaching today. And he is here with us in our support of the Conscious Life Expo. He'll be doing a workshop there on February 11. But more importantly, he shares the work and continuing the work of Paramahansa Yogananda through his many, many, many communities out there. And in February, he's offering a six-day workshop in Los Angeles.
February 3rd.
And yeah, Certainly we will speak about that. Swami Kriyananda, welcome. Welcome to our
Thank
show.
Thank you so much. I'm very glad to be here.
It's an honor for me and my listeners. Thank you. Let me ask you, being a world leader, how do you see the world as it stands right now?
I see the world as being in a mess. That's to put it in the scientific way.
Yes.
First of all, I see that people are filled with avarice, and I think avarice has brought the world to an economic collapse. I know my guru, Yogananda, said that money will not be worth the paper it's printed on. And that is a very dire state, but we've seen it happen in Germany, in Argentina, and I think two other countries in just the last century. And I know in Germany people, one man carted his paycheck for the month in a wheelbarrow, and he thought, well, nobody wants this junk, so he left the wheelbarrow full of his paycheck outside the shop and went inside. When he came out, he saw the money strewn all over the street. Somebody had stolen the wheelbarrow. So you had a terrible situation. I think we are coming to that here in America. It's already the case in several countries in Europe, and I think it's becoming worldwide. When you have depression, often it leads to war. In Europe, it led finally to World War II. And I think that not only that, we're on the edge of actually a very wonderful change. Sometimes these calamities are not necessarily all bad. This is preparing mankind, I should say, for an uplift in the world, a complete change in human consciousness that will bring, finally, peace and prosperity and harmony to the whole world. There will be no more wars for several hundred years, and it will be a wonderful period. But first of all, the preparation has to be to sweep out the garbage.
You have been teaching and sharing your life's work all over the world. I'd like to go directly to your coming workshop. It says 6 weeks to lasting success and happiness. This is a bold statement, if I may say so, Kriyananda. What, just in a nutshell, what will this be all about?
The classes will be on 6 weeks to lasting success and happiness. That's sort of a bold statement, but you need bold statements for titles. What they will contain is six classes, one on right action. You know, I've founded several communities, eight in all, in the world, and two in India, one in Italy, the rest in California, Oregon, and Washington. And two principles we have that have made our communities successful. One is that people are more important than things, and the other is that when you act rightly, then there will be success and happiness and a prosperity and victory. And so this class on right action will show how if you act dharmically is the Sanskrit word, but that means rightly, then you will have all these things. Really, the whole idea for these classes began a few years ago in India. I was in the hospital. I had double pneumonia, and I was almost unconscious, lying in bed. And this doctor came into the room, and believe it or not, his question to me was, "Can you help me?" Well, I was certainly not in a position to help anybody, but he said, "I have." I said, "Yes, I'll try." And he said, "I have a son in college in Canada. I have many financial responsibilities." And how can I meet those responsibilities and be completely right in my action, not cut a few ethical corners, let's say? And I said, well, I have found that by being rigidly dharmic or following right action, I have been successful in ways that I don't think I could have been otherwise. Well, unfortunately, lying there in bed, nearly unconscious, I was not an advertisement for success. And he left the room looking still skeptical. But the next day, I decided to write a course on it. And I spent the next year and a half writing a course on success through right action. And so this whole series of classes is just an abstract of that course. But right action itself is, I think, fundamental. Then the next class will be how to attract what you need when you need it. And this, too, is a very important subject. It does, however, and I'm going to be perfectly frank about it. I am a devotee of God. I believe in God. I think that life without God is not only bleak, but it won't give you what you want. And so I'm quite frank about it. You can attract what you need when you want, when you need it, more by attunement with God than just by egoic effort. Then the next one is inspiration. And really, everything that I have accomplished and everything successful that I have accomplished has been through a higher guidance as well as just thinking and figuring it all out. Then the next one is the importance of right attitude. The next, what is it to be practical? And finally, first things first. So these are the subjects covered in this class.
You speak about Dharma, and then there's another principle within the Hindu scriptures called karma. For our listeners, could you explain what karma is?
Karma is actually an application on the spiritual level of the law of Newton, of the law of motion. For every action, there is an equal and opposite reaction. And as the ancient saying was, as above, so below. Every physical law has its counterpart in spiritual law. The fact is that whatever you do, even your thoughts, have some kind of impact on the world. But if you're going to be dishonest with people, you'll find yourself, but not necessarily immediately, you'll find yourself having to pay for it. There's a story in Autobiography of a Yogi by Paramahansa Yogananda in which Trailanga Swami is given a bowl of lime which looks like milk, and this false devotee pretends to be giving him milk. And, of course, lime would have killed him. And Trailanga Swami drank the whole thing off, and immediately that man fell writhing to the floor. And Yogananda said, a master like this has overcome the thwarting cross currents of ego. And so, because the thwarting cross currents of ego didn't operate with him, he didn't have the ego consciousness, therefore that punishment came to this man immediately. The difficulty with most of us is that because we have those thwarting cross currents, it may take a lifetime or more than one lifetime, and so people attribute it to luck. But in fact, whatever happens to you is due to something that you have done. If not in this life, then in another life. But you have to live many lives before you finally learn your lessons and give up the ego and realize that God is the doer of everything in the universe.
A substantial number of our listeners here in the show are just getting initiated into these concepts and these spiritual principles. What is the best way to explain the concept of ego to them?
Ego is the self-consciousness that I am different from you. That everything that happens is important to me because I'm the one suffering. And so people would put it this way. What's it like that story in Charlotte's Web, which is a movie many years ago, the rat kept saying, what's in it for me, Charlotte? That's ego. Now, if you can understand that you are really a part of a much greater web of reality, then you're approaching wisdom. What happens to other people does affect you in some subtle way. If you can reach that point where you understand your kinship with all life, then you've begun to arrive at wisdom.
Who do you attract when you have classes like this? If I had somebody who wanted to join in, should they have been doing yoga classes before they can?
No, they shouldn't. And even if they don't believe in God, they're welcome. You know, when I was in Australia years ago, somebody came to me after a lecture, and he said to me, I'm an atheist. What have you got to say that'll impress me? And I said, well, why don't you think of God as being the highest potential you can imagine for yourself? And he said, well, I can certainly live with that one. So I don't ask that people have any preparation except a brain and the ability to use it.
Let me digress. Did you listen to the State of the Union address?
I did not. You know, I'm so ignorant, I didn't know he was giving one. This is terrible of me. Well, anyway, I hope it was a good one.
It was what it was.
You know what I think of Obama?
Yes,
I think he's a good man. I like him. But I think his very goodness is going to destroy this country economically. He's printing money to give to everybody, and before you know it, money won't be worth anything. And so his very goodness is his greatest defect.
Well, from one world leader to another, I won't be surprised if he listens to you. So now let me go back to business, so to speak. And after these classes, you will be at the Los Angeles Hilton.
Yes.
It'll be a workshop on a Friday.
You find out where, www.ananda, A-N-A-N-D-A-L-A, for Los Angeles, .org.
This is at 8 p.m. on Friday, February 11, and you will speak about the goal of life is bliss.
Yes.
Certainly what you are about, and of course how to attain that goal. People are always searching for happiness, and again, from the perspective of our listeners, what would happiness be, or how should it be defined?
You know, there are two thoughts. Happiness, everything in the world is dual. So if you've got happiness, you've also got unhappiness. And it's sort of like that unhappiness is sort of like a hangover after a binge.
Mm.
And so every time you are in duality, whatever you give all your energy to, you're going to have to experience the opposite. Everything is that way. The only thing that has no opposite is the divine consciousness, divine bliss. Mm-hmm. And that is the actual definition of God. This was an interesting thing back in history. Buddha seemed to be teaching atheism because he didn't talk of God. He said, you're too full of all these thoughts of all these gods and everything doing things for you. You've got to do it yourself. And so he didn't talk of God. As a result, it always happens that man gets it wrong. Man, his followers, thought that he was an atheist. Well, he was not an atheist. He just didn't believe in worshiping all these gods and hoping they'll do things for you. And so after him came Shankaracharya. This is a few centuries later. And Shankaracharya said, yes, there is a God, but he's not a lot of gods, Shiva and all that. He is absolute, or I should say, ever-existing, ever-conscious, ever-new bliss. And so this is the truth on which Yogananda based his teachings. We are all made of that bliss, and that's why everybody in the world is seeking two things. One, to avoid pain and suffering, and two, to find happiness. But that happiness is just a pale hint of the bliss that they really want in their souls.
Very interesting. Let me take our listeners to your journey. When you were 22, you had an awakening. And let me ask you how it was for you the first few years of that, and see how your journey took you to where you are right now.
I'll tell you my first evening. This was before I met Yogananda.
Uh-huh.
In Charleston, South Carolina, I wanted to become a playwright, and I was studying that until I realized that I had wanted to share truth with people, and I didn't know truth. So why should I share my ignorance? So I gave up playwriting, and I took a long walk. Everything I had thought led me to the conclusion I had avoided the word God because I didn't like the God church the churches were giving me.
Mm-hmm.
And finally I found that there's just got to be a God, and it's got to be the real purpose behind it all. But what is he? And on this long walk I thought, well, he can't be a policeman or a judge. He's got to be something else. And it finally dawned on me, why am I asking this question? Because I'm conscious. He then has to be consciousness, and I have to be a part of that consciousness. And if that is so, then the purpose of my life must be to become more in tune with that greater consciousness. I came home absolutely staggered with the grandeur of these ideas. And so you asked about the reaction of others to me. The reaction of my roommates to me that evening was, all Don is just and always so serious and ha ha ha. And I thought, why should I listen to a bunch of yapping puppies? So I withdrew to my room. I didn't much care about other people's reactions. I was too concerned with what I was seeking. But I decided that I had to seek God, and that was the only thing I wanted. I'd never heard of anybody seeking God before. I didn't know anything about the lives of saints. But I thought, even if I'm going crazy, I have to find God. And at this time, God arranged it. You know, when you raise one hand to God, he drops two to lift you up.
Mm.
And my father at this time, he was an oil geologist for Esso, or Exxon today, and he was sent to Egypt. And the day that I put my mother on the ship to go join him, I found Autobiography of a Yogi. I don't think I could have undergone this change if they had been in the country. But I said, close that book. I took the next bus from New York to Los Angeles. And when I met Yogananda, I said words to him that I never had dreamed of saying to anyone. I said, I want to be your disciple. And I was very close to him, and he told me infinite number of stories and teachings and so on. And he told me I have a great work to do. And I have been trying to do that work as a service to him ever since he left his body in 1952. I've been with him now. This is my 63rd year.
And it's been quite an amazing transformational journey for yourself and the world.
It really has.
Yes. Yes, indeed. I'm moved right now as you share that story. Okay. Thank you for letting me pause there for a bit. Swami Kriyananda, media has played a large part in the, I would say, evolution of humanity over the last, well, say 20, and especially in the last 10 years. How do we find bliss and happiness in what media is offering today?
You know, you find success and happiness in direct proportion to what you give. There are people in the media like yourself, like other radio shows that I've been on, that are idealistic and want to help people. And there are many such shows. There are others that want to make people cynical and tear them down. And the newspapers, I think, are almost a disaster. But basically, I think the radio is a wonderful medium. Television, you don't get time to say anything. And the media can help. The media is a wonderful medium. Just look at this. Here I am talking to you, but I'm not talking to you only. I'm talking to many hundreds of people, maybe thousands of people. I don't get, when I give a lecture somewhere, I don't get that kind of a crowd. And I have to travel from city to city to city to reach that many people. Here in one shot, I can talk to them all. It's absolutely marvelous for uplift if it's used right. And I wish more people in the media would understand their responsibility. They're not just there for entertainment. They have an opportunity to uplift society. That's a great responsibility.
It is. It is truly a great one. And many challenges that go with it, but again, there are many rewards as well, and it's very fulfilling. Take us through the class, your class. Do when people get something and they realize something, do they have to go through a painful process?
I don't know why it should be painful. Mine was absolutely blissful. The only problem I had was I had the nature of a doubter. And although my heart had absolutely accepted this path, my brain was, my intellect was full of doubts. And every 15 minutes I would have to sit down and calm my mind and then go back to work. But honestly, I don't know any pain. It was just an exaltation in being, living with people. I think communities are very important if they are people of like mind. You have people who support you in what you're doing. It's thrilling. We have about 1,000 people living in our 8 communities, and I have never seen such a group of happy, contented, helpful, supportive, cooperative people in my life.
That's really great to hear. Now, in my conversation with you just now, you seem to be open to many other tools to be enlightened. Is that true?
Well, of course there are. Nobody can say this is the only way. Wherever a person is, that's his way to God. I always tell people, I'm not here to convert you to anything except your own higher self. And whether you find it through yoga, whether you want to be a Catholic nun or monk, whether you want to be anything, the path is less important than the goal.
What do you think then of organized religion?
Honestly, if it were rightly organized, I might be all for it. But basically, I find that they tend to lower the teaching. And really, it, I couldn't stand it, I have to say. I had to leave the churches because they weren't giving me at all what I wanted. They were giving me things they thought I should believe. I didn't want to be told what I had to believe. I would believe what I felt was true.
People speak about chakra. Is the truth in the heart chakra, in your opinion?
The heart chakra is actually the pivotal chakra. From that point, the heart chakra is the chakra or center in the spine, which is associated with feeling. And actually, feeling is more important than reason. Reason observes. Feeling wants to involve oneself in it. And your energy can go from there downward or upward. If it goes downward, it will go toward unhappiness. And that's why we have words like, I feel downcast, I feel heavy, I feel low, etc. And then we have the other direction for the energy, and that's upward. And people who feel good usually will say, I feel uplifted, I feel high, etc. So the best thing, if you want to meditate on the chakras, it's a very good thing to do. Think of the heart as a lotus. And direct the petals upward, turn them upward mentally toward the brain. And feel that the energy of the heart, your desires, your longings, your feelings, are all being directed finally to the point between the eyebrows, which is the seat of superconsciousness. And at that point, you will find that wisdom will be given to you. You don't create wisdom. You don't reason your way out of it. You just understand. And this technique and the heart chakra is very important. There are two aspects to the heart chakra, too. One is that, or I should say to the ego, the ego, as a human being, you'll find is centered in the medulla oblongata at the base of the brain. And that is why people look down their noses at people. That's why the universal gesture of humility all over the world is a bow. You release the tension at the back of your neck and you automatically lower your head. And then the spiritual center of your self-consciousness is in the heart chakra. Feeling is finally your definition, your own definition of what is true. From the heart and the heart's feelings, you know whether a thing is right or wrong.
Children being born today, they have a term for them. They call them indigo children.
I've read about that.
The claim is that the children being brought forth in this time period are more enlightened and they have more gifts with which to be in a position so that in the future and as the world evolves, they are ready to accept the gifts of an enlightened world, an enlightened planet.
You know, there's a lot of truth in it because actually it's in a book that's just coming out or will come out soon, I'm not quite sure which, on the yugas or ages of mankind. It's by Joseph Selby and David Steinmetz. And it talks about how the world goes through definite ages. There's an age of matter consciousness, Kali Yuga, or the Dark Age, where people only think of matter as reality. They think of reality as matter. And then there's a higher age, an energy age. And we entered that age 100 years ago. That age is an age where everybody realizes that matter itself is really only a vibration of energy. Then, you know, nothing exists except God's dream. We're all a part of that dream. So matter does not have reality except as energy. Then in the next age, it's understood in Treta Yuga, it's called, it's understood that everything is really mind. And finally, in the highest age, they understand everything is God. So in this age, everything will be done by by energy. And this will give us the conquest of space. People will be able to travel to other planets. Space will be demolished as an illusion. And the ages become progressively longer. The first age was 1,200 years. This age is 2,400 years. And so on up. I'm not going to go into it at all. But it's a very interesting time we're in right now, because we have the old Kali Yuga consciousness thinking that everything should be dogmatized, everything should be material and solid and fixed. And the new age of the blue babies, you might say, new people begin to understand that no, matter is not that, it's energy. Everything must be understood in terms of energy. And you become more intuitive with this, you become more insightful. But all of it's due to the shift in age. Yes, I do believe, in fact, I'm quite certain that we are in a new age, and these so-called indigo babies, I came along before they came on the scene, and yet I think I'm somewhat that way. But I think that this is all simply a sign of a new age we have entered.
That's quite refreshing. A popular question for many of our guests here, what do you think are the prognostications for 2012?
I don't know about 2012, but I do believe that something horrendous is happening. And it may well be come to a head in 2012. I don't know. It certainly won't mean the end of the world, not at all. But it might end up meaning the destruction of many, many people. It might well meaning a complete reshaping of the world. I do think that. One time in church, Yogananda interrupted a sermon of his to shout very loudly and with great conviction, "You don't know what a terrible cataclysm is coming." And a cataclysm is usually thought of as more than man-made. Would it mean some heavenly body hitting this planet? I don't know. But you know the polar shift which you also talked about, now the magnetic pole is moving 40 miles a year. That's quite a lot. It may go up to 400, who knows? But big changes are in the air.
Certainly a lot to look forward to.
I would say, but don't worry about it. Things will get better.
Yes, that is the end goal. And with that, of course, bliss and happiness, certainly, for everyone. Let me have you give details, although I have it in front of me, of the classes happening very soon, which is next week already.
Yes, next Tuesday.
It begins Tuesday, February the 1st at 7:30 p.m. Now, this is in Los Angeles. This will be the Ananda Los Angeles Ashram House at 425 North Highland Avenue in Los Angeles. And then after that, of course, they can see you again live in person on a workshop on Friday, February 11th at the Conscious Life Expo.
Yes, poor people, they can.
Yes. And then after that, would you be in L.A. or are you going back to Delhi?
Well, you know, I've written a couple of films, and one of them is on the life of Yogananda.
Very good.
And so people are actually trying to start filming this year, and I'll have to be in it. I'll have to also direct people, because I alone know what Yogananda was like. I alone know what certain things were like. And so I'll have to be very active in that. When I go back, it won't be to Delhi. It'll be up to the village up in Northern California near Nevada City. And that's the headquarters, you might say, or the first of our centers. Then I'll go to Pune in India, where we're starting another community.
So within this year, you'll be in Hollywood, essentially.
Yeah.
For the film. It's interesting to know that you wrote this screenplay. And it's very good to know also that it's now being turned into a movie.
Yes. Well, you know, I wanted to be a playwright, so I had to give that up, but now I can get my own back.
But I think that's success and happiness coming full circle. Eventually, you can have it all.
Right, exactly.
Swami Kriyananda, it's a truly extreme joy for me to have this conversation with you, and truly an honor to have you on our show today. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. I've also very much enjoyed it. And I wish you success in your efforts to uplift humanity. That is what's needed today.
Thank you, and namaste.
And blessings to all your audience, our audience. Bye-bye.